almost no one raises the real issue of tax avoidance, right? And of the rich just not paying their fair share. I mean, it feels like I'm at a firefighters conference and no one's allowed to speak about water.
Today we walk into this house with an iconic South African plant, the Aloe Ferox. We must take the bitter with the sweet.
It is a matter that is under consideration. And all I would say is that watch this space.
Welcome to this week's episode of the SA Money Report. This financial podcast is brought to you by Fin24 and hosted by Deputy Editor Ahmed Arif.
Hello and welcome to another episode of SA Money Report. I'm your host, Deputy Fin24 Editor Ahmed Arif. Our weekly show helps to demystify and inform you, dear listeners, about the newest, most interesting, and most crucial financial or business news in SA. We also provide you a quick peek behind the curtain on one of our big stories. This week, we start off with a word as synonymous with SA as braai, biltong, or laduma. That's corruption. The Special Investigating Unit Special Tribunal found on Tuesday that former Transnet Head of Capital Projects, Herbert Msingala, had an inappropriate relationship with supplier IGS Consulting and benefited from secret profits to the tune of 26 million rand. There were several assets purchased with those secret funds, and the total value of those properties as part of those assets between 2015 and 2016 stood at about 15.2 million rand. The investigations also found that 36 cars were owned by his family trust, although they were paid for through Msigala's current account. Msigala's daughter had no income and was only 17 when properties were purchased in her name. Head of the SIU, Advocate Andy Motibi, said they anticipated that the special tribunal judgment would be the first of many against insiders who have tried to exploit their positions at the expense of our country's state-owned entities. Moving on, we have an update on last week's main story, the green paper on the National State Security Fund that got everybody riled up. On Tuesday, Minister of Social Development Lindiwe Zulu withdrew her department's green paper on comprehensive social security and retirement reform. No reason was given, but this followed an outcry after the paper proposed that all South African earners pay up to 12% of their income into a new government-managed investment fund. This fund would provide retirement, disability benefits, and unemployment benefits to all South Africans. The proposal, however, would have devastated South Africa's investment industry, as retirement investments and other savings would have to have been channeled into that fund instead. Alexander Forbes, South Africa's biggest pension funds administrator, calculated that it would lose 60% of its members if the paper became policy. Lastly, our main story of the week is about going nuclear. Nuclear. The very name alone conjures images of the Manhattan Project and big mushroom clouds, the Chernobyl exclusion zone, Fukushima, Three Mile Island, and in SA's case, corruption. After mostly dropping off our collective Geiger counters in 2017, it seems like nuclear is back, and this time it could stay, with those in favor saying it's actually really efficient and should be part of our future. Helping us to create fission in our minds about the return of the power of the atom in SA is Fin24's investigative reporter Jan Cronier. So, Jan, when you say nuclear in South Africa, the first thing it usually conjures up, at least for me, is former President Jacob Zuma wearing a warm, woolly Russian Ushanka hat on his head while he's talking to that country's nuclear company, Rosatom. Can you take us through our recent history with nuclear and why it strikes fear into people's hearts that goes beyond something like the Chernobyl disaster?
Hi, Ahmed. Yes, well, South Africa's bid to add more nuclear power to our energy mix actually stretches back to the 1980s, when there were debates about building a second nuclear power plant after Coburg came online, I think in about 1984-85. For various reasons, nothing much happened until the start of the last decade, when our energy blueprint, a document called the Integrated Resource Plan, said that we should add 9,600 megawatts in new nuclear power. Now, that's a lot. It's about equivalent to five new Coburg power stations. This was a really big contract, and there was interest from American, South Korean, Chinese, French, and of course Russian nuclear power companies. Now, a number of agreements and memorandums were signed, and things seemed to be moving forward. Your reference to Zuma in the Russian hat refers to this time. Rosatom was seen as the likely winner of the contract, although nothing was absolutely official as far as the media knew, until 2017, when quite abruptly a court ruling scuppered the whole thing. Now, it's unclear what this would have cost, but estimates range from about 500 billion to well over a trillion rand. The court ruling essentially found that government's procurement process had been unlawful almost from the start, in part because there had been no public hearings. And this proved a fatal blow for the 9,600 megawatt plan.
So now, what's spurred this new sudden resurgence into nuclear? Obviously, it's led by the Mineral Resources and Energy Minister, Gwede Mantashe. But now it's back in the zeitgeist in South Africa. So what's new?
Right, correct. So the court ruling I referred to, the 2017 one, which was brought by two environmental and civil society bodies, that put a stop to this grand plan to build a fleet of new power stations. But it didn't mean that the Department of Energy had, you know, decided to phase out nuclear or not build any new nuclear power plants completely. So when the next version of that energy blueprint I mentioned was published in 2019, nuclear was again included in a much diminished form. So instead of the 9,600 megawatts the 2010 plan had called for, the Department of Energy now said we want 2,500 megawatts, round roughly a quarter, at a scale and a pace the country can afford. And if built, this new power will likely only come online sometime after 2030. So officially, nuclear is still on the table, and the state is moving forward to more or less lay the foundations for a new build.
So obviously, this has cleared all regulatory hurdles, as far as we know. And there's been hearings also about a place in St. Francis Bay, Eastern Cape, that's a likely candidate for a site for a nuclear facility. What's the story there?
Hearings were held last month in St. Francis Bay and in Jeffreys Bay about plans to grant what is called a nuclear installation site license to a place called Teyspunt, which is a couple of kilometers from St. Francis Bay in the Eastern Cape. It's between St. Francis Bay and a little town called Oyster Bay. The applicant was Eskom, and the body that has to make this decision is South Africa's nuclear regulator. Now, Eskom itself has no plans or capability to build its own nuclear power station, which André de Reiter has said a number of times. But it does want to run the power station that is built by someone else, if one is built. In any case, it also wants to have a site or two sites, so to say, zoned for nuclear, if and when someone else builds the plant. So this is what it said it is doing in the case of Teyspunt. And the other site that it has its eye on is called Daenefontein, which is near Kuiberg, SA's existing power station. And it wants to almost have these sites, let's say, zoned for nuclear, and then hold them in reserve for the future if a nuclear power plant does get built. Essentially, it won't have to go through the process of getting it zoned. So it will speed up plans in the future.
Yeah, and the big debate is whether nuclear energy is in fact clean or even green energy. There's a big debate about this, so please help us understand what's going on there.
Obviously, climate change caused by greenhouse gases is a very important consideration for the construction of all new power plants. And this debate has again come to the fore with South Africa's Revive nuclear power program. It seems to be common cause that nuclear has a low carbon dioxide footprint once it is up and running. But it does take a long time to build a nuclear power station, during which great amounts of concrete and other building materials are used. And nuclear, of course, produces nuclear waste. Now proponents of nuclear that I've spoken to in South Africa basically echo the arguments used by proponents of nuclear abroad, which is that atomic power is essential for reducing global greenhouse gases, as it can produce reliable baseload power. But critics say, and there are many critics in South Africa, say the build process to create the nuclear power station creates harmful emissions, and that it just takes too long to build a nuclear power station. So while they say, yes, nuclear may be may have low emissions once it actually comes online, but if that process takes a decade or more, you know, 15 years, then other energy sources have to be used in that intervening period to carry the load. And I guess in South Africa's case, if you're putting money into building nuclear, you'll likely be relying on coal, and then you'll have 10 to 15 years of coal emissions. It's like a complex trade-off. So yeah, that and this debate, you know, we are going to be featuring it for months and years ahead. It's going to be absolutely key.
And lastly, Jan, obviously you mentioned the coal, us probably using coal to have to build that station. We've got a lot of energy problems in the country. And Eskom itself has really big financial problems. They basically got a 400 billion rand debt hole. Is nuclear cheaper than other methods, as its proponents are saying, or is it something... And is it something that we should all expect to be a part of our lives in the future, regardless of what form it takes or whatever? Is it something that our kids or grandkids will have to live with?
Right. I mean, that's an excellent question. Like the previous one, I think the best answer is almost going to say this is something that we're going to have to be covering in months and years ahead, because there's no definite answer. But as I understand it, nuclear has very high initial setup costs, because building it is extremely expensive, and the safety precautions that the modern generations of nuclear plants have built into them are expensive and kind of a laborious process to get absolutely right. But proponents of nuclear, on the other hand, can point at Coburg, and they say, well, at the moment, nuclear is by far South Africa's cheapest source of power per unit of electricity produced, which does appear to be correct. It has lower costs even than coal, but that, as I understand it, is only because Coburg has long been paid off, and the we're not still paying off the initial build costs, because it's a 40-year-old nuclear power station. So if SA were to build a new plant, I'm not sure how much that would cost, but its financing may take 20 years to pay off, and that means that only 20 years after the plant is built will we have like the full benefits of the cheap power. That by that time we will have paid off, hopefully, the initial financing costs. So yeah, this is another debate where we'll have to cover the strongest arguments from both sides in the months and years ahead.
Thank you for your time, Jan.
Thanks, Ahmed.
That brings our show to an end. The music in this episode is courtesy of Kitty Images and Epidemic Sound. This week's installment was produced with the help of Kayleen Morgan. Thank you for listening.